Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two, we're live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, this is Fox Sports Radio, and right here on FS1, Joel Klatt stops by. Big college football this weekend. Michigan plays Michigan State. That's a pretty big game, pretty sizable game. Pac-12 around the corner. SEC has sort of a slow week. It's good to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining us as well. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It's nice to be in a city doing a lot of celebrating.
It is.
In 2020.
Listen, some young people are going to go out and set off fireworks. Let's not. Come on. We get it. It's just.
They haven't won a championship in 32 years.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay, media. Don't overreact. It's
congratulations.
Like, congratulations. The story of the day is the Dodgers won and the Tampa Rays did a really dumb thing with analytics. But, You know, I will say this, though. It was interesting. I was talking to an executive the other day, and the executive showed me some ratings that the Dodgers ratings in Los Angeles on radio are 4 times higher than the Lakers. And I thought to myself, that is strange. It is a Laker town. LeBron is a star. Why would that be? The town put their arms around this team. LeBron and AD, the passing, the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant. I would think this would be a gigantic Dodger Laker year. And the Dodgers, you know, I mean, they're very, very popular. But why would the Dodgers ratings be 4 to 5 times higher on radio than the Lakers? And then it hit me last night. Because in Los Angeles, you've had to live with this team. This is their, fourth trip to the World, third trip to the World Series in 4 years. You've grown up with Clayton Kershaw, and he struggled, and you've watched how emotional it is. And that's the great thing about baseball. You go to a minor league, even the greatest stars fail 70% of the times. And it's visceral, and it's emotional. And the city has embraced this team and has gone through the ups and downs. That is not to discount what the Lakers did. But hiring LeBron and AD as mercenaries to come in, swoop to the city, win a championship doesn't quite feel the same. People in Los Angeles have lived with the Dodgers. And when you're part of a family, you see your kids cry and you see them get a D and you see people fail and you see people get fired and you see the disappointment of it. And all that kept building and building. And the Dodgers built this team the right way. That is not to say they don't have money, but they used it sparingly and strategically to get Mookie Betts. Too often the New York Yankees just go buy a player to solve a problem. The Dodgers never did that. They built their team through the farm system. They found occasional guys like Mac Muncy on the scrap heap, and then they would smartly attain Mookie Betts, not because he really solved a problem. It's because how in God's green earth is the best athlete in the sport available on the market? He was. They swooped in and took him. 2 years ago, Corey Seager got hurt, and they brought in Manny Machado, but they did not sign him long term. They did not. They developed Cody Bellinger. They said, we don't need to pay for this. It's not part of our long-term plan. Seager is hurt. It is a short-term issue. We'll get Machado for now. Mookie Betts was not brought here to solve a problem. You get to the World Series, you don't have any. He was bizarrely available, and because they have developed such a beautiful farm system, they were allowed to give a couple of players up to the Red Sox, who see themselves as rebuilding to a degree, and they get Mookie Betts. But the reason the Dodgers right now are more popular in Los Angeles, it's not about the politics. Oh, for God's sakes, folks, the lowest ratings were hockey. It's not a political sport. It's not about that. It's because you lived through the Dodgers' pain. They were family. It's not mercenaries. It was about everybody, and you watched their failure. I mean, let's put it in context. Losing the World Series is not failure for most teams. But when you live through something, it's family. And it feels so much more special last night than hiring superstars, who, by the way, I love LeBron. I love AD. But it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel the same. Buying championships, that's not what the Dodgers did. That's not what they did. They did it the right way. And the reason I bring Joel Klatt on now is because it's the right time to teach my young friend about the ins and outs, the ebbs and flows, the peaks and valleys of college football. And Joel Klatt is now joining us. For the record, a former minor league baseball player of some renown who
very much a failure in the baseball
realm. But baseball is a sport built on the ability to overcome failure.
That is true.
And
That's true.
And the Dodgers ratings in this town are enormous because this city has lived through seeing Kershaw unravel, and they love Kershaw.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's why your ratings are so big. The fans have lived through your failures year after year after year, and it's like you're like family to them.
I was going to be
You're like drunk uncle getting D's on his report card. I absolutely love it.
By the way, I didn't really think much about this all weekend, but your near upset of the week was Pitt over Notre Dame.
You were leading off with that. Listen, I'm on the bench. I'm on the bench. I will not give you a thank you.
Okay,
That was rough. And by the way, Pitt did exactly what I said they were going to do, which was play great run defense, and it didn't work at all.
So let's just address that first. Notre Dame, the week before they had struggled against Louisville, but Tony Dungy brought something on the broadcast. He said, listen, they wanted to work on their passing game. It was windier than they thought.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of the game against Louisville, Notre Dame had to go, okay.
Backtrack.
We can't do it. And I thought Dungy brought up a great point. I think Notre Dame, to me, is probably the fourth or fifth best team in the country.
I have them number four right now, just ahead of Georgia, because Georgia lost that game to Alabama. I still think that they're kind of behind, just from a talent perspective, those teams at the top. And we get that. I do think when I watch them now, and I went back and I watched that game on game tape, one, Pitt was really struggling personnel-wise. Their quarterback was out, so on and so forth. Now, having said that, Notre Dame is really big. At key spots. They've got a safety that's enormous. Their tight ends are big. Like, they've got big bodies that allow them to do really cool stuff offensively. I think the limiting factor right now is probably Ian Book. If you just have to have him sit there and drop back and throw the football, which they're going to have to do at some point. You know, they got Clemson next week. Not this week, but next week.
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to do that? And I think the questions remain for Notre Dame on that. But this is a really good team.
Yep.
A really good team.
And
top five in the country, certainly.
Yeah, and I actually think they match up okay with Clemson, parts of them. To your point, I do think Notre Dame can lean on you a little bit.
Sure.
And Clemson hasn't faced that kind of physical team this year. They lean on you. Notre Dame can win ugly. They won't beat Clemson. But you can ugly up games, and I think Notre Dame is built to do that against Clemson.
There is an element to Clemson, though, that they're so veteran, they're so good, I think they're bored, right? I think they're bored out of their mind, just waiting, like Gerard Butler in 300, you know? And they're just, like, licking their chops for an opponent that can actually test them, you know? And they thought they were going to get that in Miami, and they walked out there and just... bam, just crushed Miami. Something tells me that we're in for a game like that against Notre Dame. Like Clemson is just like they can't wait to be tested finally. And I think Clemson might roll Notre Dame, but that's a week from
okay,
now.
Okay, you, Gus, Jenny Taft, Michigan State at Michigan. So now you and I, if I recall, are both on the hard. See, I've always had this theory about Michigan football. It's not Ohio State. It's not Alabama.
It's not. No, historically it's not.
There's like five programs in the country, and I think actually USC used to be one. They're not anymore. They're not as committed as I thought they were. It is Oklahoma. It is Alabama. It is Ohio State. Boy, it gets real thin after that. They're totally committed to football. And then there's about eight teams, of which Michigan falls in historically. They're really good. But Ohio State is more committed. They'll fire coaches more quickly. Brady Hoke wouldn't have lasted a four-game losing streak.
No.
And I think Harbaugh, given that they're a 9.5-win program to a 10-win program, and he's right on track, and I think he's done a very good job.
I'll go a step further. He has done a good job. And listen, you know, he's going to draw the lion's share of the criticism because there was so much focus on Jim. And the antics and the pants, and, you know, although he changed to blue, which is interesting, right? So he's changed things up. Here's one thing to really understand about Jim Harbaugh. He's just now adjusting, and this adjustment has been a little bit late, although if it comes to fruition, watch out, because in college football, you can't win at the top end unless you can score 35 points against a really good team. Okay? You just can't.
That's the sport now.
That's the sport now, right? And Bama has had to adjust, and we've talked about it, right? Nick Saban has had to adjust offensively, 35, 40 points in big games. Ryan Day goes to Ohio State. Guess what you have to do against Ohio State now? You can't beat them with Don Brown's defense. You can't just out-defense them and tough them and win the game. They came close a few years ago, remember, and they had that overtime game, but then what happened? Ryan Day steps foot in Columbus, Ohio, and guess what happens to that offense? Goes through the roof. Now what do you have to do to beat Ohio State? If you're Michigan, score. You've got to be able to score, and they haven't been able to even come close to the offensive efficiency. And what I saw last week from Michigan was the corner being turned offensively. Joe Milton, their quarterback, is an incredibly talented guy. He's huge, first of all. He's got a quick release, one of the strongest arms that I've seen in college football in the last 4 or 5 years, stronger than Josh Allen or even Herbert. I mean, throws absolute lasers. He can run it pretty well. And here's the other part. They haven't gone pure spread like they tried to do last year with Shea Patterson and just run those like soft zone schemes in the run game. You know what they did in the run game? Right. They went back to what Harbaugh does well, which was pull guards, pull tackles, run power-oriented schemes, and it all has to stem from number 42, Ben Mason. You're saying like, well, Joel, why are you bringing up Ben Mason? Let me tell you why. Because Ben Mason was a guy who was a fullback under the old offense. Last year, Gattis comes in to be a spread coordinator, so he's got to go to defensive tackle. So he played defensive tackle last year. And this year, they're like, you know what? Let's, out of the shotgun, go back and be a more power-oriented run game. So Ben Mason's now back on offense. They're lining him up all over the place. He had several key blocks on the big runs, and they're back to getting that downhill. So now all of a sudden you've got the power-oriented running game, a quarterback that can throw it, and still a defense that I think can be efficient and certainly rush the quarterback. This may be Jim Harbaugh's best Michigan team.
All right.
I'm not saying they'll beat Ohio State. I'm just saying, like, I'm bullish on Michigan after watching them last week.
All right. So I'm going to throw a theory at you.
Oh, boy.
So I was listening to, he's a very smart guy. He's on that show, The Prophet, Marcus Lemonis.
Yeah.
Very smart guy.
Yeah,
Camping,
love that show.
Camping World, very smart show. And he was talking to CNBC, one of their financial guys, and he was talking about how he is watching people change in America. They want nature more because of COVID. And COVID, some of this stuff is going to change how we act in America. This is not a temporary thing. Much of this will stay. And even if vaccines come out, he said, we are seeing over the last, with all the stress in society,
the ability to work remotely and virtually.
Okay. And this is my point. If COVID is going to be here for a couple of years, the NBA, hockey, baseball, and the NFL have shown an ability because of billionaire owners to handle it. I mean, God, until last night, we didn't have a baseball player have COVID for months.
Right.
NBA never had one. NHL didn't have one. But on a college level, it's different. You do not, even at Ohio State, you do not have $7 million a year for COVID. What am I getting to? If Marcus Lemonis is right, and many of the business leaders in America say, get used to it. This is going to be around until 2023, 2024, at some level. It makes college sports less attractive. Ryan Day, Lincoln Riley. Do you want to go through this a year? Do you want to? I thought, I was watching it this weekend, and I said, you know, it's weird how a world changes, and all of a sudden, I'm going to be at this job forever, and then you wake up one morning and go, you know, this is not really the world I want. COVID is so difficult for even big financial institutions that Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day say, I go to the NFL.
I could see that.
I think the Ohio State and Oklahoma could have their coaches cherry-picked in the next 3 months.
I will tell you this, for guys that got into this profession because they love the sport,
yes.
They love to develop players, they love the locker room, they love the team aspect, football, they love football. Every coach that I talk to now throughout the country has told me that they're spending maybe 10% of their time on football. Now, that's not to say that's bad, but COVID is taking a huge chunk of their time. Then they're also worried about the mental health of their players, the social justice aspect of what's going on.
They're 18 years old.
In our country with their players. And the coaches are saying, like, listen, it's just different, right? It's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. So if you did get into this based on the expectation that you wanted to be a football coach and develop football players and build football character, college is different now. Now, I'm not suggesting that these guys – will or should leave. I am agreeing that it is different, and there is going to be a dynamic shift in how college coaches are going to have to handle their organizations versus what a head football coach in the National Football League would have to change. Now, you bring those two guys up. Here's why I think that that's so interesting. If you're the New York Jets and you're trying to woo Trevor Lawrence out of college football, like, come on, let's go. Like, don't stick around in college, right? You know, don't flex your muscle in terms of your leverage. Come to the Jets. Wouldn't one of those guys be attractive?
Thank you.
I think.
And Trevor Lawrence said yesterday, I'm not sure if I'm going to go to the NFL. It's like, sure would be hard to turn it down if I got Lincoln Riley.
I would say, though, like, that comment's going to get a lot of run today. And those of you fans out there, just give it its proper context, because he was asked a question about his future, and he gave an answer that an athlete should give, which is, hey, I'll worry about that at a later date. He didn't say, I'm willing to go back to Clemson.
That's right.
He basically gave a big, vague answer, which mature athletes are going to do when asked a specific question about their future.
Yeah, that's why I didn't lead with it today.
Good job. Good job. By the way, I think the Jets might be a better location than people realize.
Oh, boy.
Why say, oh, boy? Let me tell you, it's better than the Bengals. It's better than what Joe Burrow was going to with the Bengals.
I think Joe Burrow's made Cincinnati way more attractive.
Really? With one win? Interesting take. Let me tell you why the Jets are better than the Cincinnati Bengals as a destination for Trevor Lawrence versus what Joe Burrow had to deal with the Bengals.
All right.
It's because the Bengals hadn't won, anything in Burrow's whole life. Have they even won a playoff game in his lifetime? Probably not.
Probably not.
He wasn't alive in the late 80s, was he?
No.
No, right? I mean, what, these kids are now
born in
95. I wasn't
truly 95. Alive until I came to Fox.
There you go. Came to the West Coast. So all I'm saying is that was the same ownership group. You know, they are historically cheap. The Bengals are. Like, that organization has had the same problems at nagging them forever. Whereas the Jets, I don't think Joe Douglas fits that mold, right? Joe Douglas, their GM,
he's
won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
They've got a ton of picks.
Yeah.
If they deal Darnold, they're going to get a first. Why will they get a first, Joel? Here's why they'll get a first. Is because you've got really good organizations with aging quarterbacks at the back end of the first round that would love to have Sam Darnold. Love to have Sam Darnold.
Colts.
What happens if the Colts want to move off? The Steelers are going to need
Patriots.
A quarterback soon. The Patriots are in that boat. The New Orleans Saints are in that boat. The Falcons may be in that boat, and they're not even in the back end of that first round. But if they deal Matt Ryan, maybe Darnold is a ticket there. All I'm saying is that I think that the Jets have ammunition. They have the GM. They've got a great left tackle that they just drafted.
And Quinnen Williams, despite the trade rumors, is a very good, young, emerging defensive lineman.
I just think this narrative, yes, the Jets are terrible this year, and we understand that. What they have the most money under the cap for this offseason.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, this narrative that Lawrence is going to somehow force his way out of New York, I think is overblown. I think it's media-driven. I think Lawrence might look at the Jets and say that's actually an attractive spot.
Finally, Tua's debut. You watched him a lot at Alabama.
Yeah.
I thought he was the best prospect. I could be wrong. I do think his injuries bring him down as a prospect.
Okay.
I don't worry too much about size. I think he's got some breeze. He's accurate. He's got innate leadership qualities. He's a smart kid. I think he succeeds in Miami. Well, what will concern you over the next month with Tua's starts if you see something?
I would say just physical ailments. You know, like, if he can stay healthy, I think this will be quality time for him to go develop. And I've talked with some people. He's been doing great in practice. Great in practice.
Oh, you've got that sourced?
Yes. And the other part of this is kind of a no-lose for the Dolphins. Let me tell you why. You know where they're at. They're rebuilding 100%.
Yeah.
It doesn't really pay dividends for them to go to the playoffs with Fitzpatrick. It just doesn't, right? Because then they're still like, okay, well, when are we moving on, right? Whereas if Tua comes in and goes to the playoff, you throw a huge parade, and you're like, we did it. We found him. If you don't, it's still fine because he's coming off of injury. He's learning. We're developing. We're still building. This is kind of a no-lose. At first, I was like, why did they make this decision? But when you really look at it, this is a no-lose for the Dolphins. It really is, because if it doesn't go well, he's developing. If it goes great, we can throw a party, and you don't have to deal with the question bleeding into the offseason if Fitzpatrick were to take you to the playoffs.
Good to see you. I'm not even going to ask for a near upset.
I'm on the bench. No near upset this week.
Michigan will beat the Spartans.
I mean, maybe. And that game may be closer than the experts think.
Oh, boy. What does that mean?
What happened?
There we go. Joel Klatt, good seeing you, buddy.
You too.
Eric Dickerson, last hour of the Hall of Famer.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, a great doubleheader starts with the Vikings taking on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Then Drew Brees sees the Saints against Nick Foles and the Bears. For other regional action, it all kicks off at 1 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Raiders-Browns is fascinating to me, Joy. So the Raiders had that COVID issue with their offensive line.
Right.
So we don't know what they went through last week. We saw them beat Kansas City. So we know they're talented. Cleveland, everybody talks about what an impressive win it was, but they needed to come from behind multiple times to beat Cincinnati. Now the Odell Beckham situation. So the question becomes, this to me feels like this is like a fascinating game. Like the Raiders here, I think we've undervalued them because of last week Tampa, the COVID stuff. We don't know what they were going through internally. We're over-evaluating Cleveland, a team that 2 weeks ago could not compete against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they're two teams we really don't know what they are.
I like the Raiders getting a field goal here. This is a game right now. They're feeling themselves in Cleveland. They beat Cincinnati. They struggled to beat the Bengals. If I told you there's a team in the NFL, they needed great play in the fourth to beat Cincinnati. The week before, they were humiliated by Pittsburgh. Does that sound like a great team? That's Cleveland. And
That's
now you got a Raiders team that the COVID situation, we just think now they're bad. They beat Kansas City a couple weeks ago.
Is this in the Blazing 5?
Yeah, I think the Raiders, it's a very interesting week. I think I always look in the Blazing 5. Who are we undervaluing today?
Right.
Like right now we're overvaluing the Niners because they look like the world's best football team against the Rams and New England. But they were much more desperate against the Rams, and New England's a mess.
And they have a lot more injuries.
And
now
Seattle had a bad fourth quarter against Arizona, so a lot of people are selling Seattle stock, and it's like, no, Seattle's back home. They're probably going to be – there's a lot of stuff where you see we're overvaluing certain teams in the league. I think we're a little overvaluing Cleveland this morning, and I picked them as a playoff team. And I think we're undervaluing a little Seattle because of that bad fourth quarter. They were actually controlling Arizona for 3.5 hours. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
It's two a time.
Oh, so exciting.
Very exciting. Dolphins will get their first real look at Tua this weekend when he gets his first start. Ryan Fitzpatrick did not hide his disappointment when he got benched for the rookie, but Brian Flores believes the culture of the team is built to handle the change.
I think the guys, they rally around each other. I think they support one another. It's a team effort. So again, it won't be just Tua, but you know, he's going to have to do his part as far as communication, getting us lined up, making good decisions. I mean, we're asking of him what we would ask anyone.
You know, the Dolphins are trending in the right direction, and they've kind of always been, well, at least for the last 10 years or so, this kind of like middle-of-the-road team. No one really trusts them. Like, they're not bad, but they're not good.
That's exactly what they are. We don't trust them, but they always have good players.
Right. Well, I wanted to take a look at what I've already lived through. But just to put it in perspective of what the Dolphins have gone through at the quarterback position, it's pretty dramatic. They've had 21 different starting quarterbacks start at least one game since 2000. The most starts in that span was Ryan Tannehill with 88. It's 21 since the year 2000. Marino went 147-93 in 17 seasons with the Dolphins, went 8-10 in the playoffs. He made the playoffs in 10 of his 17 seasons. The Dolphins are 152-174 since he left, and in 1-4 in the playoffs. They have not had a franchise quarterback since Dan Marino left the Dolphins.
That's why they are putting so much stock into Tua.
As they should.
Absolutely.
It's what Joe Klatt just said is 100% correct.
It's not about winning this weekend. And by the way, they're only a 4-point dog. This is actually a perfect spot because the Rams, off a hugely impressive Monday night performance, have to fly 3,000 miles to the Dolphins off a bye. This may be another Blazing 5 pick.
Mm. Interesting. I completely agree with Joel. I did not think it was a shocking time to move off of Fitzpatrick. I was actually waiting to find out when they were going to.
We were guessing.
It all falls apart.
We kept waiting. We kept guessing what week it was going to happen. Right. Like we were like, I was like week nine, week, and then the NFL moved the bye up. So the league kind of forced Miami's hand. They were going to do it at the bye week. Clearly, they just moved the bye week up.
Why not give him an extra week to prepare?
With the number ones.
We always knew that they were going to move off of Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick said he knew until that the move was actually made, right. And then he's saying he's surprised. Getting to the playoffs or winning a meaningless playoff game is not going to help the development of the Dolphins unless Tua is the quarterback. Everything Joel just said is correct. Winning organizations, I, having had the privilege of being born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and watching the Steelers my entire life, know what a winning organization does.
Yeah.
The standard is the Super Bowl, not making the playoffs. That's not what winning organizations do. That's not success. If you're building, then yes, that's a successful season. Like if they were to make it this year with Tua. Getting to the playoffs with Fitzpatrick does nothing for the development of the Dolphins. It's mediocrity, and I'm not interested in it. Tom Brady's decision to leave New England for Tampa Bay has been working out very well for him. He is clearly winning that divorce right now. And Peter King thinks he should have seen the move coming after Brady's last game with the Patriots. He spoke with Brady right after the loss and says, looking back, he sees that Brady's demeanor wasn't just because of the game's outcome.
Tom Brady was, I would call him despondent that day. One thing that I can't help but thinking is that he knew for a quarterback, New England was hopeless. You tell me if there is one offensive player on that team that causes a defensive coordinator to game plan against him. There is not one.
Cam.
Yeah. I mean, Peter said it on our show the other day. There's no weapon on the offensive side of the ball.
And
for the
Brady
Patriots
knew it.
That, right. And Cam was not there, obviously, because Brady was the quarterback. So the only player when Brady was there that the defensive coordinator would plan for was Brady. And in this case, it's Cam. There's no offensive weapons that make defensive coordinators nervous. And Brady knew that. So him leaving makes perfect sense. Why do you want to end your career in that situation? Why, when your input is given, is it not taken? And you're Tom Brady. This was like a fork in the road that we all saw coming,
yes.
Right? I'm not married to romance, right?
Oh, God, me neither.
Like, if things end that way, wonderful. I mean, who doesn't love a good love story? It's fantastic. Happy ending. It's great. But then there's like reality where, you know, you don't like each other all the time. And sometimes you like spend some time apart and then you come back together and then like you work some things out and you make some exceptions or maybe you just decide to work it out, right? Or you just divorce. And that's fine too, because at the end of the day, you guys both have journeys you have to go through in life. And that's really what happened with the Patriots and Tom Brady. Like, yes, would have been romantic for him to end his career there as the greatest player of all time. Sure. But it's also a spinoff story that he went to Tampa Bay and could very well win a Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
All stories are available. Zach Ertz's contract with the Eagles is up after the 2021 season, and there has not been much progress on an extension, but there is some interest from other teams.
Oh, Packers.
The Eagles reportedly got calls from the Packers and the Ravens.
He'd be a great fit for Green Bay.
About the tight end, yes. Offers were made, but Ertz hurt his ankle and had to be placed on injured reserve instead.
I don't think Philadelphia should. My question is, Philadelphia, I still think, is going to win that division. So I'm not sure if I'd do that.
Well, the trade deadline is Tuesday, November 3rd. Big day, November 3rd, huh? 4 p.m. Eastern. Ertz
oh
is in
Lord.
His... It's going to be an active
well, there may be a
day.
Trade in the White House, too, so who knows.
Yeah. Ertz is in his eighth season and turns 30 in November. He has 24 receptions, 178 yards, and one touchdown. Dallas Goedert's rookie deal is also up after the 2021 season. He's only played in three
games.
Okay,
so they're,
this,
Philadelphia's saying,
also hurt his ankle.
Philadelphia's saying we can't pay for both. Let's move one.
Yes, and it's time for Ertz to get paid. So, yes, this would have been a trade you'd make before, obviously, he got injured, but it may still be available depending on how long the injury is.
Let's be honest about New England. After Aaron Rodgers and a couple of their linebackers, Green Bay's not paying anybody. They're not paying Aaron Jones big money yet, are they? They're not paying Devontae Adams big money yet. You can afford to pay Zach Ertz. I mean, they're not – again, it's not like Seattle where you're going to pay in Jamal and Bobby Wagner. Now you're paying Dunlap. You're playing – who's Green Bay paying? Aaron Rodgers deserves the money, and the linebackers both came over, made good money, not outrageous money in the free agency a year ago. Like, go pay Zach Ertz.
Zach Ertz deserves to be paid, and he can still produce at a high level, obviously, when he
Absolutely.
Is healthy. So
he's a volume tight end. Aaron needs another weapon.
He's made it clear he wants to stay in Philadelphia, but again, like that, this is clearly not how it's going to work out. Not going to have both. If you have Dallas Goedert and he comes back healthy, they're going to stick with the younger guy.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Why, if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I consider stalling and not going to the Jets, and why you don't need New York anymore in the NFL. That's coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Great to have you in. There's a story out today. Trevor Lawrence says he may come back to school. I listened to the tape. He doesn't really say that. He does intimate he doesn't have an answer yet. He will go pro, and he will end up, I imagine, with the New York Jets. I do think it's interesting, though, that he does not need the New York Jets. And let me just say this, actors, the world changes, no longer need to go on Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert. It's called social media. Kim Kardashian told David Letterman, I have 137 million Instagram followers. Why would I go on a late night show? The quarterbacks in the NFL, Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and Aaron Rodgers on the most commercials playing Green Bay, Kansas City, and Cleveland. You don't need New York for stardom in 2020. What about the Yankees? That's not a New York thing. If it was, you'd have to go to the Mets. That's a great brand thing with the Yankees. The NFL didn't have Los Angeles for over two decades and grew substantially. Wall Street used to be where the rich cats hung out. They made movies about it. Now Silicon Valley could buy and sell Wall Street and has major influence. New York's a great city and I love it. There's nothing like it in terms of energy and fun when it's not freezing. But you don't need New York as an athlete. Trevor Lawrence has the leverage, not a city. Brock Huard's my friend. He's been working at Fox Sports now for a little over a year. We put him on NFL games now, in which he is unbelievable. One of the smartest guys that does football analysis work for any network. He's now ours, and we love that. Brock Huard, NFL player for 6 years, joining me. Back up to Peyton Manning with the Colts, which I don't think I've ever said that. I think I knew that. But I just saw that in a piece of paper. So let me ask you this. You, as a former Seattle guy, we're both Seattle guys. I've been saying this, that Russell Wilson feels like a life preserver sometimes on a sinking roster. They got him Carlos Dunlap this morning. I think that's big. I like Pete Carroll, and I like the GM, John Snyder. But I watch Monday, and I say to myself, it's too Russell Wilson-centric. Is that, what, as a former NFL quarterback, do you see some of that?
Well, you say that, Colin, because the Seahawks are dead last on defense. I'll say that again. The Seahawks are dead last and giving up over 50 yards more than the second worst defense in the league that I've called twice, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. So you can have a middle-of-the-pack defense, but you also need a defense. At least they're giving them takeaways, Colin. That is one thing they are doing. They are giving him some extra possessions. But that defense did not hit Kyler Murray one time. They did not hit Kyler Murray one time on Sunday night. That can't happen. And this is a defense, let's remember, that Pete Carroll continues to have invested in. Draft capital, Jamal Adams, two future first-round picks. Like, this is a group defensively that they have committed to that should not be this bad. So, yes, there is too much on Russ. If he's got to throw it 40 or 50 times, and the people love it because he's cooking all over the place, but you're not going to win a world championship. He'll have the biggest numbers he'll ever had. He may have the most individual glory, but to win a title, to win that division, they have to be more balanced as a football team.
There's a rumor out today, Zach Ertz to the Packers potentially. They've made calls. We've heard rumors about Amari Cooper to the Green Bay Packers. What I think sometimes fans forget, you can bring certain players on, like a corner, and they can pick up a system very quickly. But quarterbacks, there's a reason in the summer they invite their receivers and tight ends out to their town because it's all about timing. How long would it take Aaron Rodgers and a veteran Zach Ertz or Amari Cooper that you literally think that Aaron would throw them open, would trust them, could know they would be in a spot? Like, I think fans sometimes think, so you throw the football around. Quarterback, receiver, that is a relationship. Yeah. How long does it take to build?
Yeah, and to further that point, I think a little bit, Colin, you're not going to Clemson where you've got like four plays, right? And you run two formations and you're up tempo. You're going in Green Bay to probably the most complex offense in the NFL, to probably the most demanding quarterback when it comes to that precision and timing you're talking about. You know, what they have done, I had them twice earlier this year, and the amount of time they spent this offseason, Colin, trying to eliminate vowels in their call, right? So they can make that call in enough time from head coach to quarterback in the huddle and still get to the line of scrimmage and do all their check with me. So it is a very complex system too. Now, I will say this, you're not going there to be the savior. You're not going there to be the one. Davante Adams is the one. So you're going there to be the two, or for Zach Ertz, you're going there to really complement Mercedes Lewis, the tight end. So you're not going there having to just be the one to hit number four in the lineup. You're going there to hit five or six in the lineup. And also, if they make that move, I think Aaron Rodgers would be a little bit more patient than he would be with some of the young players they've tried to develop. You know, that Alan Lazard injury was a big one because he was coming. Aaron was really liking him. He was confident that he could be there too. So I think it would be a challenge. It'd be very difficult to any young player that does not have a depth of football background. But an Amari Cooper, a Zach Ertz, have played in systems, played in multiple systems. They could do it. But I guarantee you that quarterback will be pretty demanding of exactly where they need to be.
6 years in the NFL. He's calling NFL games for us, called the Falcons Lions last week. We know the teams that need a quarterback, and we know the teams that have a great quarterback. Atlanta's fascinating. You start looking at Matt Ryan. He's older. I do believe as the game changes, you can't move him around much in the pocket. He's good enough for some. I don't know if the new coach and GM in Atlanta, and you just watched his game, is Matt Ryan somebody a new coach should say, all right, I'll take 4 years of Matt Ryan, or is it time to draft the Justin Fields, develop for a year, and move on? What do you see?
Yeah, 4 years, that's not going to happen. Now, 2 years is a different conversation, and Colin, his finances of his contract are going to make it very difficult on whoever that next GM or head coach is to say, trade them, move them, cut them. That's going to be financially so irresponsible. So more than likely, you're going to have him for 2 years. And I think 2 years in the right system, you know, with the right supporting cast, they've done some good things on offense. But as I mentioned to you earlier, they were the second worst defense only to the Seahawks. Can't rush the passer, not taking the ball away. Some challenges on that side. So you're going to have Matt Ryan, whoever that GM or head coach, in my opinion, you're going to have Matt Ryan for the next couple of years because that contract is just so financially difficult to move if you wanted to move off of him.
Do you think there's a market for Cam Newton? I did after the Seattle game. Then I came to terms with, oh, wait, everybody scores on Seattle. And then I looked this morning and I'm like, if I get two more bad showings, and it's not all Cam's fault, it's the slowest receiving corps in the league, I wonder what the market is for Cam. What say you?
Yeah, it depends, Colin, on what kind of tape he continues to put forward throwing the football. What they did the first couple weeks was awesome. The league hadn't really seen it, didn't make many adjustments to it. He's running all over Miami. He's running all over Seattle. But we know that's not sustainable, especially a player at his age and his wear and tear on those tires. So can he throw the ball effectively enough? The last couple weeks, that's been a definitive no. That's coming off no practice time. That's coming off, as you said, a beat-up receiver crew. Edelman is just Band-Aids right now. So it's going to be a challenging environment for him. But it will, to me, Colin, be all about how efficient, how accurate can he anticipate. I'm not seeing that. I haven't seen that the last couple weeks. You're going to give him a grace period. It's all new. There's less practice. There's not immense talent outside. But it will ultimately come down to how well he can throw it. And more than likely, Colin, how much Bill Belichick believes in him. Because they don't have another answer. They're not going to draft one or two. They're not going to get Trevor or Justin. So it really comes down to, I think, how much does Bill believe in him to extend him long term.
6 years in the NFL, a Fox NFL analyst, does a tremendous job. Brock Huard, love having you on the show, man. Thanks for coming by.
Always a blast, Colin. Anytime, bud.
You bet, Brock Huard. By the way, a little inside the rope is he was at the other place, and I went for a year and a half to 2 years. I went to our management, and I said, he's a star on Seattle radio. The guy knows more football. You can put him on college or pro. We've moved him on pro. He's terrific. He really is one of the most knowledgeable guys. I've learned so much from him about football, Brock Huard. Really, really bright guy. His family in the state of Washington it's the Manning family in the state of Washington. The Huards all end up playing at Washington or going on to, you know, very prolific college careers. Gentlemen, stop phoning in your underwear. Get Tommy John, best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Save 15% right now. TommyJohn.com/HERD. It's great to have you in. We call this now Winner's Town. If the Rams, you know, the Rams can win the Super Bowl. Now, they need somebody to knock out Tampa.
It's possible.
Well, once you take out Tampa, they match up with everybody else fine.
They've already been there. Let's not forget.
They got the coach. Despite what everybody says, they got a quarterback that's already been there. They got the best defensive lineman in football, a top five corner, and a great receiving corps. It's not a lot. They're not rebuilding their lines. It's a real football team. Wouldn't that be something? Hour 3 coming up.